Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. This is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of the week that we read back some of the messages you've sent into the show recently. Let's see, Rob, if you have no objection, I think I'm going to jump right in with some responses to our Beast War and Apron episodes. These were about non-human animals doing various things that you might call cooking.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we've gotten so many responses to those studies about apes and apes eating raw potatoes, and then people writing in to say, sometimes I eat raw potatoes, or one time when I was a kid at church, they made me eat a whole raw potato or something. So Chad continues the tradition. Chad says, about 20 years ago, I worked in food service and took a serve safe class. I still remember the horror stories of what can happen if cooked potatoes are not cooled properly, which can lead to botulism. I was unfamiliar with the effects of raw potatoes, but a Google search indicates they can cause gastrointestinal issues. I'd say cook your potatoes and promptly cool any you won't eat right away. And on this part of the message, I wanted to respond by saying, yeah, Chad, I was looking into this, and what I was reading about the danger of baked potatoes that haven't been cooled properly was specifically with reference to those that had been wrapped tightly in aluminum foil, potentially creating an anaerobic environment that is favorable to botulism. So, for example, I found a study in the Journal of Infectious Diseases. This was a case report called A Large Outbreak of Botulism, the Hazardous Baked Potato by Angulo et al. So this is tracing an outbreak of botulism that happened in April 1994 in El Paso, Texas, that was traced back to a restaurant, and specifically the people who were affected primarily were those who ate a potato-based dip or an eggplant-based dip. I guess that'd be baba ganoush, probably. And the authors write, quote, botulism toxin type A was detected from patients and in both dips. Toxin formation resulted from holding aluminum foil wrapped baked potatoes at room temperature, apparently for several days before they were used in the dips. Consumers should be informed of the potential hazards caused by holding foil wrapped potatoes at ambient temperatures after cooking. So I guess they baked the potato, but it was tightly wrapped in foil, and then they just left it out and didn't cool it. And somehow that created an anaerobic environment where the botulinum could thrive, or the spores, I guess. And that's no good. So you don't want to do that.
I was talking about this with my mother, and as it turns out, I didn't remember this, or I'd never noticed this, but her whole life, whilst preparing potatoes, she always eats the ends of the potato raw when slicing up the potatoes.
Huh.
Yeah. She just says that's what I do. Like to do it.
Just likes them? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. But then one last note, Rob, you mentioned in a previous episode that you were terrified by your mandolin, or I don't know about terrified, maybe I'm misrepresenting, but you expressed concerns about the slicing off of your fingertips. And Chad comes with a recommendation. He says, as for the mandolin, I recommend cut resistant gloves. So they make it kind of, I don't know if it's a chainmail sort of thing for your hand, but you can just slice away on the mandolin. It's not going through those gloves.
You know, I just purchased a pair of these for my mother, but I didn't even think about the fact that I could get a pair of these for myself and have some stress-free mandolin usage. Because, yeah, I still haven't bothered to replace the mandolin with a safer mandolin, and I'm still just like shredding half a carrot and then asking, hey, who wants to eat this? Which often works if my son is around.
Chad says one last thing, which is, you might think using a glove while using a mandolin is a hassle, but I encourage you to take a stab at it. There will be a number of dad jokes in this episode, actually.
Oh, yeah. We did recently rerun that episode. That's right.
Oh, that would be why. Okay.
All right. This next one comes to us from Amanda. Amanda writes in and says, hi, Robert and Joe, longtime listener here. Stuff to Blow Your Mind was the very first podcast I subscribed to way back in 2012. Recently, I've been listening during my commute to and from the International Primate Protection League Sanctuary, where I work as a caregiver for 30 white-handed gibbons. I was pleased to hear gibbons come up in the episode, The Beast Wore an Apron. I've never observed the water cupping behavior you mentioned, but they sometimes dip the backs of their hands in water and then suck it from their fur. I have read that wild gibbons rarely descend to the ground and instead drink the water that collects in their hairs as they swing through the dewy forest.
Gross.
No, I don't know. That sounds kind of... I mean, the dewy, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay, next time you're thirsty, just wait till... You know, you get out of the shower and then wring your hair out into your mouth. Delicious.
All right. They continue. On the cooked versus raw question, our gibbons love cooked sweet potato. They are offered it as part of their breakfast each morning, and it is usually the first item they pluck from their bucket of mostly raw veggies and browse. They also prefer their beets cooked, and some are willing to try healthy muffins, quiches, and other baked goods. If you do decide to do an episode on frozen foods, I can also confirm that gibbons eat banana popsicles. One unpopular prepared food item among gibbons is Jell-O. Many fail to recognize it as food. Some are even afraid of its jiggling novelty. Maui, our greediest gibbon, who has earned the nickname the Cookie Monster, fled to a high platform the first time I placed a cube beside his lunch bucket.
I love this.
I've attached a video of Nicholas with his morning sweet potato. Like us, gibbons think that it's rude to video others while they're eating. You can see more videos of gibbons eating things on the IPPL Instagram, and that is IPPL_Somerville.
So I checked out this video, and Nicholas the gibbon here, he's eating a cooked sweet potato, and he's peeling the skin back, it looks like he's eating the orange flesh, and then the skin is hanging around the outside like a candy bar wrapper peeled back. So I wonder, do they eventually eat the skin or do they throw it away?
Hmm, interesting. Well, thanks for writing in. That was wonderful. I know so much more about gibbons now.
Yeah, great email. Thank you, Amanda. All right, should we move on to some responses to the vegetable lamb of Tartary?
Let's do it.
All right, let's see here. This is from James. James says, hi guys, love the podcast. I've been listening since the early days. Regarding cobwebs, they really do work. This was an aside in the episode about a traditional remedy of people trying to staunch bleeding from wounds by cramming it with cobwebs. Mm. James says, my grandfather grew up in the slums of Glasgow in the 30s and 40s, and that was all they used on cuts. He taught me how to use that and plantain, the lawn weed, not the banana, to stop bleeding when I was young. You put a bit on a cut and it coagulates in under a minute. Having taken a bit of organic chemistry, my guess is it bonds to the protein fibrils that form in clotting blood and ties them together into a solid mass much more quickly. Hmm. Not sure if any study has been done, but studies have been done on using plantain to clot blood. It contains an enzyme that accelerates clotting, and I can personally say cobwebs are faster. Not a good sample size, but it's very noticeable.
Hmm.
Great input, James. Thank you. James also says, on the topic of lab-grown meat, a friend of mine mentioned an aspect of it that you didn't touch on. If you can grow lion meat, you can grow human meat. Hear me out. I have no desire to be a cannibal, but how long do you think it would be before some Hollywood star decided to culture a tissue sample and sell steaks? Seems far-fetched, but Nicolas Cage would totally do it. Oh, yeah. Oh, come on.
Yeah,
a Cage steak, yeah. Anyway, keep it up. Love the show and really love Weird House Cinema. Cheers, James.
Well, yeah, that's a lot to think about. What happens when we get into the realm of cultured human meat and then celebrity human meat that has been cultured? Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit, right?
Who's the most delicious celebrity human?
I mean, maybe it's Nicolas Cage. I don't know. I guess you want... I'm trying to think about some of the logic of meat. I guess you want...
Good marbling, you know.
Yeah, you want good marbling. I guess you don't want an actor who's giving a lot of really energetic performances like Cage, though, because he's going to be stringy, right?
It could be like you don't want a high stress level actor. You want somebody who's
good low energy performer.
Rob and I have just spent several minutes trying to look up character actors whose bodies, cultures of whose bodies we would apparently eat. But then, like everybody we look up, we find out tragically died and we didn't realize it.
Or died, you know, of old age.
These
guys were getting up in years. So anyway, it remains an open discussion. All right, here's another one. This one comes to us from Albert. Hi, Robert and Joe. Once you started describing the Lamb of Tartary, my D&D mind immediately remembered Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, a carnivorous plant monster that lures its victims to it by presenting a part of itself that resembles a bunny rabbit. You can search for images of it, but here is a link to the lore. No mention of whether Gary Gygax, was inspired by the Lamb of Tartary. Thanks, and keep up the good work, Albert.
Well, I dug up some illustrations for you to look at here, Rob. They generally involve like a stump that has a big toothy mouth hidden in it, and then a bunny or a squirrel on top, maybe some kind of root-like tentacles.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I have to say I'm a little disappointed I hadn't seen this before. I wasn't familiar with this monster. And looking into it a little bit more, it seems this could be because it was apparently introduced in the 1980 adventure Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, which I don't know at all. And then it was reprinted in 1983's Monster Manual 2, which I also didn't have any exposure to. And if I'm reading everything correctly, I do not think this monster has been published in an official D&D product since then. So that's probably why I've never seen it. Though even if it had come out, and there's some additions, like basically I played AD&D second edition, I guess, and then I played fifth edition. So there's plenty of room for it to have appeared and just to be completely off of my D&D radar.
Mm.
But it's a cool creature, and I would love to encounter it. The second image that you included, and this one looks more recent, and maybe this is something tied to a homebrew sort of thing, but in this one, it is a squirrel atop the deadly, threatening mod stump.
So what's the idea is that your heroes would be like, look, a squirrel, let's approach it with our guard down.
Maybe that's why it hasn't popped up as much, because it reminds one of the Mimic, which is a great D&D monster and, you know, has expanded beyond D&D, which is, of course, this thing that looks like a treasure chest. And then when you get close to it or you open it, it's filled with teeth because it's a monster that wants to trick you into getting close enough to the treasure chest that it eats you. And, you know, that's very, it's poetic because it's like, oh, your greed brings you in close to the monster's maw. And it's a fun looking monster as well. Simple design, everything works with it. But with this, yeah, like what's the deal? I guess if your characters are hungry enough to want to eat that squirrel or that rabbit, then it works. But otherwise, yeah, you just like, we could pass these by all the time in the real world, and we're just not interested in catching that bunny rabbit or that squirrel.
Okay, now the next message. I got to warn you, we got some dad jokes ahead, but okay. this is from Mark, and Mark says, "Dear Joe, Robert, and Seth," he begins with some nice comments about the podcast, but says, "You know, I can't believe you would say something so ignorant as what you said in the Vegetable Lamb of Tartary episode, which is that, you know, there are no plants that grow animals out of them. There's no such thing as a plant-animal combination." And he goes on to say, "I submit the following list, a partial list, I assure you, of actual organisms offering literal proof that plants and animals have indeed combined. Have you considered the gooseberry, the fruit bat, the eggplant, the cabbage worm, the pig nut, the wood tick, the cowpea, the dogwood, the catmint, the chickweed, the shadbush, the buckwheat, the birdlime, the fruit fly, and the crabgrass?" Mark, I admit it, I was wrong. I stand corrected.
Mark really had me here with this email, because it was a real roller coaster, because I started reading it and I instantly was like, oh my goodness, what did we get wrong? We messed something up. Now we got to correct it. And then I realized, oh, it is a joke. It is a joke. He got me.
Yeah, me too. I read the beginning and I was like, oh, did we screw something up? Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Mark. Oh, and maybe while we're on the subject of dad jokes, I'll move on to this next email. We got a response from our listener, Anna, on the dad joke episode. I'll just read a couple of the jokes she includes in this message. First one, she says, "I have to set up by saying I enjoy your passing mentions of the book Jane Eyre and the movie Wuthering Heights. Question, what do you call a dinosaur that gets lost on the Yorkshire moors?"
I don't know. What do you call a dinosaur that gets lost in the Yorkshire moors?
It's a brontosaurus.
Ah.
And the second one is, "Why are mountains funny?" "Because they are hill areas."
Oh, that one hurt. That one cut deep.
Thank you, Anna. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road, any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, this next message we're going to look at was in response to older episodes we did on the Ark of the Covenant. Now, as a bit of background to explain this message, in those episodes, we talked about stories of the Ark in the Hebrew Bible and elsewhere, and at some point, we discussed this bizarre idea that some professor published in a newspaper in the 1930s that the Ark of the Covenant did exist, but was actually an electrical condenser, and that Moses was a skilled electrician. Suffice to say, there is no real evidence that this is actually what the Ark of the Covenant story is about. I would say this explanation is just operating on the ancient aliens principle. You know, it's what if, when a story describes some magical event from the ancient world, it did actually happen, but it was caused by aliens or by anachronistic future technology. So in this case, it would be when the Ark, you know, strikes someone dead for touching it or kills them with a tongue of flame for approaching in the wrong way. It must have actually been because this was an electrical condenser and they got 10,000 volts of static electricity and so forth, which is certainly a fun game to play. Not a very good way to get an accurate understanding of ancient literature. But Lex gets in touch about these episodes, starts off by saying some nice things about the show, and then goes on with the message. Rob, do you want to read this one?
Sure. Lex writes, I recently listened to some old episodes and love your discussion of the Ark of the Covenant in your episode from 2020. However, I did not want to write in about an episode that was recorded over 3 years ago and last aired in 2019. However, you mentioned Raiders of the Lost Ark in your recent Weird House episode on The Devil Rides Out, so that felt like that was my chance. I especially loved part two of the episode, which focused on the electric ark. It instantly reminded me of one of my favorite songs of late. It's called Mercy Seat by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, but you only should listen to the live version that I have linked below because the studio version is inferior. I was not familiar with this song. Were you, Joe?
Oh yeah, I looked up this live version. This is a great song, and I've never noticed the connection that you're about to make here, Lex. But this is wonderful. Rob, you should click on the link and listen to it when you get a chance.
Okay. Lex continues, the song is called Mercy Seat, in reference to the Ark, but is primarily about an inmate waiting to be executed in an electric chair. I thought that this was fantastic, given the sometimes electric origin of the alien fire coming from the Ark of the Covenant, but I can't help but wonder if Nick Cave was exposed to and contemplated this mythology when writing the song. It certainly incorporates some other religious themes. Either way, I find the song to be chilling and emotional, and everyone should give it a listen. Johnny Cash also covered the song on his album American 3, Solitary Man, which I think you have talked about on the show. Thanks for always giving me such great content, Lex. Well, I've definitely listened to that album, so I have heard a cover of this song before. I'm blanking on it.
Oh yeah, okay. Well, it's an excellent song. So Mercy Seat, of course, is the traditional name for the top of the Ark of the Covenant, the lid, where it is described as the angels with their wings outstretched toward the center of the Ark lid, but also as a euphemism for the electric chair. And I never would have noticed this connection, that like these weird bronze punk theories of the electric arc being the uniting theme. So excellent catch, Lex.
And I have to say, I don't think 3 years is too old of an episode.
No, write in about whatever you want. If it's really old and we're going to feature it, we might do like a refresher at the top of your message. It's no big deal. All right, this next message was about our episodes on The Three People Die, and this is from Josh. Warning, this email describes an eye injury, but it does actually connect to a condition that we talked about in the episode of polychoria or pseudo-polychoria, where it appears that a person has more than one pupil in their iris, or in the same iris. And so Josh says, "Hi all. When I was in middle and high school, airsoft was very popular. If you aren't familiar, they are low-power guns that shoot plastic BBs about the size of a pencil eraser. A particularly popular activity was having airsoft wars, which were similar to paintball, but with less of a mess. Of course, an essential piece of equipment was safety glasses. On one occasion, a member of my church congregation was engaging in such an airsoft war without safety glasses. There was a Murphy's Law moment when he was hit in the eye. I wasn't there, so I don't know the full story, but after a couple of months with an eye patch, he revealed that a small portion of his iris had detached, leaving him with a second pupil. I think he said it did blur his vision a bit in that eye. That goes to show how fragile the eyes can be in comparison to pretty much every other part of the body. On a less gross note, the last time I wrote in, you read my message on the podcast. Shortly after it dropped, I got a text from my mom asking if I had written in. I had no idea she listened. This was the second podcast that something similar to this happened. Keep up the great work, Josh." What was the other podcast?
I mean, I just love that Josh's mom is keeping such good tabs on him, you know?
I don't remember what this message was, Josh, so I don't know what you're talking about, but I guess your mom knows you well.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, speaking of which, you know, it goes without saying, I would hope, but I'll go ahead and say it. If there's something you want to write in to us about, and there's something you don't want, if you don't want it read on the air, just say it. Just let us know. Right. Or if there's a portion of it you don't want read on the air, just let us know, and we can do that. So in the future, Josh, we can keep your mom out of this entirely.
Also, shout out to Josh's mom.
Yeah. all right, here's another one. This one comes to us. This is from a Vault episode on carnivorous plants, which is timely. We're just doing a lot of plant content recently. Jeremy writes in and says, "Hello, Joe and Robert." Jeremy begins by saying he's been listening to some older episodes, including the carnivorous plants episode that aired in 2016 and reran in 2020. Which, that's interesting. We usually don't, is that correct? We usually don't do reruns like that, but I trust him. Anyway,
Jeremy, I think it was one of those big playlists that ran.
Oh yes, at the beginning of 2020, it was requested that shows put out some big playlists, and we tried to make it fun, and so that was one that probably came out. Jeremy says, "You asked whether there are any plants that have evolved to feed on anything other than insects. I believe there is a potential evolving example in the Pisonia tree on Heron Island, Great Barrier Reef. The tree produces sticky burr-like seeds which entangle the knotty tern chicks which hatch in them. The chicks become so entangled that they cannot fly or escape and hence die beneath the tree, thereby fertilizing the soil. So the tree grows better, produces more seeds, and captures more chicks, etc., etc. While not quite up to your example of vines lashing out to grab prey, the seeds are doing the same job. Cheers, Jeremy.
I believe this tree is sometimes known as the catchbird tree. And yeah, there was an article I found about it in JSTOR Daily that was pretty good, if you want to look that up.
This is interesting. Yeah, so this is not just local hearsay. Like there's been some serious work on this. But it also reminds me of the dream of G.K. Chesterton that Borges relates in his book that I read that passage concerning in our episodes on the vegetable lamb of Tartary. All right, should we dip into a little Weird House Cinema devoted email?
Oh, absolutely. Let's go for it.
All right. This one from Pat is regarding The Devil Rides Out. This is the Hammer horror film that we discussed. So Pat writes, another great episode, a favorite film. I had fun going over the details. I wonder about your review of Christopher Lee. Could it be that you are not in tune with British sensitivities? I'm reminded of the demeanor of English Bob in Unforgiven. I think Brits would expect a Duke to, quote-unquote, take on airs. Highly recommend The 7% Solution. Nicole Williamson as an over-the-top, coked-up Holmes. Alan Arkin as Freud. Robert Duvall as Watson, and a great cast of support. As always, you guys need to keep it up. Thanks a lot, Pat.
We need to, huh?
We need to. We have to. It's required. Yeah, I still haven't seen The 7% Solution. I need to get around to it. I love the cast. As for Christopher Lee taking on airs, this is something that I think Kim Newman brought up in the extras on that Blu-ray for The Devil Rides Out, that there, you know, he talked about the Britishness and ultimately the kind of the, to a modern viewer, unlikable upper crust Britishness of the Duke. Like there's that scene where he's telling Rex to, quote unquote, take one of the automobiles, take one of the cars, you know, it's no big deal. And there's another character, you know, more than one character just sort of leaves an automobile somewhere. Like it doesn't even matter. You've got more at home.
Simon, I'd rather see you dead than take the tube.
We'll have to come back and do a Christopher Lee movie at some point where he plays a more likable character, which is to say, even a villain.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he's the most lovable villain ever in The Wicker Man.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, should we do one more? Let's do one more. Okay, this one from Macarius. Macarius says, hey, Rob and Joe, longtime listener, first time writer. Really enjoyed your podcast on the Mark Hamill Guyver movie. I've never seen it personally, but I have a real fondness for The Guyver 2, Dark Hero, which is the sequel. My uncle actually owned the VHS copy from the 90s, but I didn't ever watch the movie. I was just kind of entranced by the alien-looking dude on the cover. It was only many years later that I actually sought out the film. Little bit of trivia, the main actor in it, David Hayter, who plays Sean, is the voice behind Solid Snake in the Metal Gear Solid series of games. Ah. I knew for years that he was at first an actor and had heard it was this anime-esque Guyver movie, but didn't put two and two together until watching the film on YouTube. It's still there. And searching on the internet and recognizing the cover from my childhood. It's not an especially great movie. It's very low budget, wooden acting, kind of stilted action sequences, but I still have an overbearing fondness for it. It helps that there was a 2-month long span where my wife was working very early mornings, and it became something of a morning ritual that following her 5 a.m. alarm, I'd wake up, pop Guyver 2 Dark Hero on, and try to get a couple of hours dozing before heading to work. Anyways, love the show, Macarius.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's such a heartwarming story.
I love hearing when people have some sort of a, you know, very particular relationship with an ultimately kind of obscure film like this. You know, where it's not everybody's tradition, but it has become this person's tradition, or it was their tradition at some point. So that's great. Yeah, the David Hayter detail about Solid Snake, that's fascinating as well.
The Guyver. what does that mean?
Yeah, so this thanks for writing in on this. Like I say, I love little stories like this. We also heard from another listener about the Guyver who really filled us in on the lore of the Guyver. So we're going to have to save that one for next time. So if you want more Guyver listener mail, you know where to find it. It's going to be next Monday on Stuff to Blow Your Mind listener mail.
Perfect.
In the meantime, what else do we put out in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed? Well, we put out episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind. We do that on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Those are the core episodes. That's the science and the culture and the mythology and so forth. On Wednesdays, we're still doing short form artifact or monster fact episodes. And on Friday, that's the time for that's the time for Weird House Cinema. That's when we set aside most serious matters and we just talk about a weird film. All right. So yeah, those are the episodes. That's where you find them. Keep writing in. Let us know your thoughts on past episodes, potential future episodes and everything in between.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.